Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine. If you know me, you know how obsessed I am with live performance. To me, nothing replaces being in a theater and the lights going down and the orchestra starts to play and that first moment of magic. And I know the way I feel about theater, some people feel about sports or opera or dance or comedy or food. And what if there was a place that you could go and find out which live events are going on near you that night? And then for a discount price, you can get off your couch, put down that clicker, and experience the magic that is live performance. Well, there is a place, goldstar.com. You just go to that website, you type in your city, and every amazing live event will be listed at discount prices. Theater, dance, comedy, film, food, concerts, sports. No more staying home. You are going to go out and build memories and experiences that expand your mind and heart through live performance with GoldStar.com. GoldStar is in 26 cities around the country with over 8 million members already signed up to find out what event is going on near you. So go to GoldStar.com. Get out of your house and build memories that are magic for you and your family. Expand your mind, expand your hearts. Go see live performance by using goldstar.com. Tell them Alana sent you.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today. Growing up, his playground was backstage at all the theaters his parents were performing in. Now, all these years later, he is making his mark on the New York theater scene. Welcome Zane Pies to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
My guest today is Zane Pies. Zane is currently starring in The Perplexed, the world premiere of Richard Greenberg's new play at Manhattan Theater Club. Some of his other theater credits include Sunday, Dead Poets Society, Mercury Fur, and Skylight. Some of his film and TV credits include Room 104, Margot at the Wedding, Alba in June, and Minion. He was born and raised in New York City. Mm-hmm. And recently, I've had the pleasure of co-starring with him in a play, and I kind of feel like I get to call you my newest friend.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to say about that.
All right.
As we sit here, I have the playbill for The Perplexed in front of us, just to remind us of the fact that even though it's our day off, we should still be learning the new lines, cuts,
yeah, we got some cuts for tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think they're good cuts.
They're good cuts, and that's the exciting thing about being part of a world premiere. This is a little different because...
Can I take my shoes off just so I can sit cross-legged here?
Of course you can.
All right.
So that brings up the fact that usually you guys know I'm in a recording studio in Midtown, but today's President's Day, 2020, and my studio is closed, and I had hoped for Zane to come on, and he has so graciously agreed to come to my home.
This is so much better. I'm sitting on a couch instead of... at a table.
Yeah.
Is it at a table usually?
Yeah, it's like a pretty standard. If you can picture a recording studio, that's what it looks like.
I have some tea here.
Yeah.
It's very cozy.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah,
great spot. And full disclosure, also, we had a late night last night. It was our first week of previews.
Yeah.
We finished, and we all decided to go out and celebrate the fact that we were still standing.
I had a drink, and I had a martini, and then I drunkenly told the bartender if she gave me a free drink, I would give her a comp to the show.
Right.
And so, Christine, the bartender,
we can't wait
to have you. Yeah, that'll...
I kind of feel like you had more than one martini. I could be wrong. Not that I was counting.
I might I may have had two martinis and then another drink.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Christine, we're looking forward to that. I should have probably saved that comp for family.
Yeah, but if your family isn't giving you a free drink.
That's just like how my brain works.
That's right. Well, that's drink. A little known fact about you.
Yeah, yeah. I just give stuff away after like...
For alcohol.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but you know what? I think that kind of thing is great for cast bonding.
Yeah.
These late
nights. I agree. Yeah.
And it's totally fun.
And it's the first time we all really went out together.
Yeah.
It was fun. Yeah.
Great. So that's last night.
Mm-hmm. That's last night.
And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, and I had mentioned this to you, is I find it fascinating, the idea of continuing in the family business.
Right.
So both of Zane's parents are actors. It's so normal, like if your family has like a real estate company or plumbing,
sure,
or they're in the union and Teamsters, or there are a million jobs that everyone expects and hopes that you go into the family business. You know, like Levine, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I didn't join my father's accounting/law firm.
Right.
Which was a great disappointment to him.
Was it really?
Yeah, I think he would have
really
loved. He took over his father's company. Like, yeah. It was founded in like 1923.
Wow.
And my father, who is 90, just retired this year.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So there are many partners that have come into the company since, this firm, but I think it would have given him tremendous happiness for
right.
one of his daughters. And my sister is an attorney, but she's in the district attorney's office. She's not doing the kind of thing that he did.
Right, right.
So I guess my question for you is, having two
actor
parents who've been real journeymen, who've like really have done everything,
mm-hmm.
But started in the theater and loved the theater, and
yeah.
so you were telling me that, you know, you saw really firsthand the kind of reality of a life
yeah.
in the theater.
And first of all, you know, my parents always told me, I didn't really know that I wanted to be an actor for a while, and I kind of just dabbled with it for a while, but they never encouraged me. They said, you know, I think when I was really little, I was like, Dad, I think maybe I want to be an actor. I was probably like 5. And he said, well, make sure that there is literally nothing else you can do. And if you have, because you should only be an actor if you have to be an actor. So, but yeah, I mean, I grew up kind of backstage. My mom just did a bunch of off-Broadway plays.
What are your earliest memories of that?
My earliest memory, I mean, I just remember my mom coming home in the winter, and she had this wool coat, and I'd give her a hug when she got home. I'd wake up and give her a hug, and she smelled like the theater, which was kind of like a mixture of, you know, like that bat. There's just like a smell of a green room, which,
yeah.
and it kind of smells like
asbestos.
It's like asbestos, just like banned chemicals,
grease paint, and booze.
Yeah, just like deep existential questioning. No, she smelled like cigarettes, her wool coat, like halls, and just like the backstage smell, and then it's like such a nostalgic. I don't know why I'm talking about the way my mom smelled.
Because that's so sweet,
but
and
that's
I feel like,
the first...
we should create a candle that's called like backstage.
Backstage mom.
And it has like all of.
Yeah. We can sell it the Yankee Candle.
Yes, that
it's
would
just
be
like...
so good.
Yeah.
Or it would be like on Playbill.com. Or
yeah, right.
That's side note. We're on it.
Yeah, we're gonna make that sound. And then, you know, I kind of just, if my parents couldn't get a babysitter and they were both working, like, I'd be backstage, and I kind of just, it was kind of like magic getting to see these people from the wings go on and perform. Bless you.
Sorry. It's the dust, even just thinking about the dust from the green room.
Hey, Lola.
Allergy. Now my dog is joining us, you guys. Sorry. We will add a photograph of Lola. It won't be your headshot. With this, well, maybe it'll be a headshot of you holding Lola for this
good.
Week's episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what are the plays that you remember being around when you were little?
I mean, I remember my mom did a play called Jackie with Margaret, who's in The Perplexed with us. When I was really little, she did a play called Abigail's Party at the New Group. She worked a lot at the New Group. With Jennifer Jason Leigh.
I love that production so much.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I started acting, is through that, because she was married to Noah Baumbach. But
Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Yeah. Not your mother.
Correct.
So you're around the theater.
So I was around
you're
the theater.
You're a kid. You're like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And...
And it was like...
Were you doing school plays also? Were you doing theater in school?
Well, I went to this really hippy-dippy middle school, which I loved, called City and Country School. And every year, towards the end of the year, you'd write and everyone would be in a play. And so that was something I always looked forward to at the end of the year. But I wasn't like a huge theater kid. I kind of thought what my parents did was... I couldn't even understand what it was. It was so strange to me that my mom would, like, I would see my mom come off stage and she'd be sobbing. And then within, you know, a few minutes, she'd be back to normal. And I was like, that's impossible. I don't understand this. That's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
But I think I just was always fascinated with actors. And
how... Were there always actors? Was there social life actor-centric?
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just always a bunch of actors hanging out. And, you know, I grew up in the East Village.
This is the 90s. What year were you born?
I was born in 93.
Okay.
So it was still a completely different neighbor. It was, completely different neighborhood back then. And I grew up... There's just a bunch of artists around in that neighborhood. I mean, believe it or not, the... lot across the street from the apartment where I grew up was just a field. I mean, it was like there was still.
And it was a field with like junkies, or were kids in it? Cause
no, it was kind of like a mixture of like a parking lot junkie area and like let's play baseball, not barefoot, but
right.
You know,
you didn't want to step on a needle.
No, that was always the parent fear of these villages, that your kid's going to step on a needle.
Well, Tompkins Square Park for a long time had this reputation of having both like beauty and artistry and people who were addicted to stuff.
Yeah. My playground was in Tompkins. But I grew up like, you know, surrounded by cool artistic people.
Yeah.
I grew up next to Kiki Smith, the sculptor, and she's like, I'm like a huge fan of her stuff now, but when I was a kid, it was just kind of like...
There's Kiki.
There's Kiki. She's like in her backyard making these enormous, you know, brass sculptures of nude women fighting forest animals. It was cool. I don't know. I think I fell in love with theater when I was a kid. And then that love kind of... I came back to that later, you know.
Mm-hmm. But in the middle of all this, at a young age, I mean, we're fast-forwarding a few years, you are in this independent film that was one of those small films that really was like a critical darling and, you know, at the time where huge movie stars started to do indie films.
Yeah.
And Margot at the Wedding is one of those movies. At the time, Jennifer Jason Leigh and Noah Baumbach were married.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre Greta Gerwig, and Nicole Kidman and Jennifer Jason Leigh are doing this movie for Noah, where they play sisters and they need a son for Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
And so, it sounds like because your mom and Jennifer were in this play together,
The
timing worked out.
I mean, basically, I think. I was old enough that I didn't really need a babysitter.
You were 12?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was pretty independent.
Yeah.
I would be hanging out backstage after school or whatever.
Did you get to know Jennifer? Were you hanging out and talking to her
Exactly. Like, I would just be doing homework backstage and chatting with Jennifer and my mom and, you know, all the other actors. And Jennifer mentioned, she was like, oh, my husband Noah is... directing this movie, and there's like a part for a kid in it, and it totally wasn't like you should audition for this or anything like that. It was just like, will you just read some of the lines for this kid? We just need to hear what it sounds like, a kid reading it. And I was just around, so I went over to their house a few times, and it was just the three of us, and we just kind of like listened to music. They let me DJ, and I was like really into Nirvana, and I don't know like if that went over well, but I was just like...
That's so cool.
And so I just, like, read these lines with them. And then I did kind of do one formal audition for Doug Abel. And then I didn't really think that I was going to do this thing.
Had you done anything before that?
I mean, no, just like these school plays that I would, you know, co-write with my classmates, you know, and it was probably like, you know, now looking back, we pretend we were pilgrims and, you know, it was like all historical.
Right.
It was like compile the curriculum into a play.
Yeah.
As I said, hippy-dippy school.
Yeah,
great
yeah,
school.
Yeah, yeah. I have a lot of friends whose children
went
to that school.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Lots of blocks and...
We played with blocks until we were like 20 years old.
It's great.
Blocks
are good.
Blocks are great. I still want to... I should get some blocks and play with them more often.
I feel like Lego sort of took over in some ways while my kids were growing up.
I know, but the wood blocks are so classic, you know?
Yeah.
Because you got to really balance them.
Yeah.
They don't just snap in like that.
No.
They don't hurt as bad when you step on them.
No.
But yeah,
now I know what your opening night gift is.
Wooden blocks.
Wooden blocks.
Yeah, you make me so happy.
Yeah.
And then Noah just had me over to his office one day.
Was this intimidating at all, or
not
was it just...
Not really, because they were so sweet and chill about it. You know, it really wasn't like there was pressure on me to, like, book something.
Right.
They were kind of just like... But then I think slowly they were like, oh, like, maybe Zane would be good in this. And then Nicole Kidman came over.
To your house?
To,
their house.
To Noah's office. We were just there, and we just read, like, all of our scenes together, which took a really long time, and...
Did you know who she was? Were you
totally. I knew who she was. I hadn't seen like all of her. Yeah, I hadn't seen Eyes Wide Shut yet. But
that was when you were 13.
Yeah, I saw that when I was 13. Yeah, as soon as I was 13.
of all the movies.
You know, I was aware that she was a big deal.
Was she still married to Tom Cruise at that time?
No, she was with Keith.
Okay.
Who I got to know pretty well too. But I just remember I was really nervous when she came over. I was drinking all this water, and I kept on having to pee. I peed like 12 times during this.
Like, why is my mouth stuck together? Yeah.
Because I just knew it was a big deal, but I didn't really understand. But yeah, so that happened. And then,
did she try to put you at ease? What was her
vibe?
Yeah,
she was super, super nice. Uh-huh. Super, we just chatted for a lot of it, I remember. We just talked about, like, she talked about her kids, I talked about my parents, we talked about life, and... We got along really well.
Were you a good reader? Are you a good cold reader?
I'm a good cold reader.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at memorizing.
Mm-hmm.
So like for an audition, it takes me, like, it's so hard for me to get off book if it's in like 3 days.
Uh-huh.
You know, I need like a week to do it every day.
Do you have a process for learning lines?
No. I really should have a process. And I wish that I had one that was really bulletproof but I'm so... I'm always, like, holding the book, but,
Well, I know that I'm in this play with you, and words come out of your mouth every night,
I know the words
out.
For our play, yeah.
Yes, for sure. Because
we had, like, 5 weeks to learn those.
Yes.
So,
you're reading, just to go back, because what a huge, heady thing, in retrospect.
Yeah.
Like, now, if you got the lead, playing Nicole Kidman's son, it would... be something you'd care about, you'd work really hard for, maybe, you know.
I probably wouldn't get it because I'd be like so...
You'd be so freaked out.
So, I'd want it so bad.
Yeah.
But back then I was like, oh, like... You know, and then eventually I was so happy when I got it.
And then
they had me do like a screen test and everything.
You had to do all the things.
I had to do all the
things. Someone was paying for the movie
because,
and they needed
to
approve it.
Yeah, I had to like do the whole Scott Rudin screen test.
And were there other kids screen testing that you saw
no,
when you were there?
No, I think they kind of, like, kept me separate, because they were just auditioning, like, having regular auditions at the same time.
Was Scott Rudin around, and was he...
Yeah, he was around every day.
Yeah. And were you aware of him as a kid? Like, that's a very powerful producer. Did you feel his presence in the creative experience, or more like a guy, one other person in Video Village?
I mean, I knew that he was important for the process of the movie, but I think to his credit, he was pretty creatively hands-off and let Noah do what Noah wanted to do. And I think he was just more facilitating that creative process, so just making sure that he had space to work, which was cool.
Where was that beautiful house that you shot in?
Yeah, it was in Hampton Bays.
What a beautiful spot.
It was great. I was there for like 2.5 months. I got to miss school. It was awesome.
That's the best. So Noah said that I don't know if that was true for you too, but that he had, that Jennifer and Nicole had spent a couple of weeks rehearsing together before you guys started, which is a luxury for a movie,
yeah,
to kind of have rehearsal like that. Were you a part of that, or was that something they did more to develop a sister relationship?
Yeah, I mean, we would have kind of just quasi-rehearsals, but it was really laid back. It would be like at their house, and they would, and Noah would be like, well, like, why don't you guys just, like, make some food and run the lines and, like, mm-hmm. use the stakes of the scene but pretend you're, you know, cooking dinner, and then we'll just figure it out. I remember I read Nicole's lines once and she read my lines. You know, it was all
the other
really
person in this film that was such a, like, kind of outlandish yet perfect casting choices to have Jack Black
yeah.
enter this film, who at that time was known for really comedic stuff.
Totally.
Larger than life, and it's hard to imagine him in a kind of small, intimate, indie film about family drama. Do you have memories of him on set and around? And
yeah, he was.
Were you aware of Tenacious D or
yes,
any of his
I was,
other stuff?
I was a huge Jack Black fan, so that was like a
awesome.
Really big deal for me.
Yeah.
And I remember there was this one scene that was just the two of us, and we're like talking in this shed. And I think that the scene was probably cut because I couldn't really act with him because I was too.
It wasn't the Nicole Kidman.
No,
yeah.
No, it was.
Jack
I mean,
Black.
You know, I was like I was so into Tenacious D. I thought that was so cool, and but yeah, and I just couldn't really get my lines out. But he was the sweetest guy. He really made sure like I was comfortable on set. I remember I had like a tutor on set, and I decided that I would read Of Mice and Men, and he decided he would read it too.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So we kind of would talk about that. I remember he I think he punted a burrito once, like he just like kicked it, just like because he knew that like that would make me so happy, and it really did.
And it did.
He would like we would watch YouTube videos together. He was like really wanted to make it super comfortable for me. Great guy, so nice, sweet, and so funny.
Something I'm curious about, especially for kids, you know, it wasn't something you were pursuing. It's not like you had gone out to LA and done a million pilot seasons and Disney shows and that sort of stuff.
No.
You're really starting in this, like, very elegant, sophisticated, you know, storytelling for your first film. And without a coach,
no.
right? Obviously,
no.
you've been around it.
No coach.
You're learning the lines somehow.
Yeah.
You had a lot to do, and you were also playing the son of a beautifully complicated, possibly slightly unstable character,
yeah,
right?
Totally insane.
And I don't want to
yeah.
name it, or spoiler alert, so
right,
people
right.
haven't seen the film, but like, this is a gorgeously troubled, very provocative, interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see why Nicole Kidman wanted to do this movie.
Totally. Yeah.
And there are a lot of things that she does that as a mother would be really hard to play when I think about what she had to do
yeah.
as someone with little kids of her own, probably at the time. Or maybe she didn't have
yeah.
her.
No, she,
I mean, Connor, I don't know how old her older kids were, but
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know if she and Keith had these sweet girls yet. But
no, not yet.
Mm-hmm. But she went for it. And they were painful, painful scenes. And I'm wondering how, you know, there are stories of, like, Steven Spielberg telling Drew Barrymore, like, her dog died, and that's how she cried, you know,
yeah, that's
in
what,
E.T.
Every
and
single
then,
time, every scene,
yeah.
Nicole would just be like, your dog died. It's saying your dog died. No. She was the best. She was so sweet, actually.
But how did they handle that for you, and how did you understand that, and were you just one of these kids who were like,
I mean,
I
got I
get
that it.
It
was a
I'm
movie.
Not, I'm not really
I knew
with
it
an
wasn't
abusive
real.
Mom or whatever,
yeah.
emotionally abusive. Right.
I mean, you know, I'd watch my parents act, and, I mean, especially my mom on stage, so I really could see, you know, that you put yourself through something, and you know that it's not real, and, I mean, sometimes when you're in the middle of it, it feels really real, but that you're going to be fine eventually.
Were you fine when you look back on that
no,
whole
I'm
experience?
No, I'm really fucked up from it.
Is that why you're still such a mess?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm having another martini right now.
But listen, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, why not? It's my
Christine
day off.
Christine sent a whole thing over. What did you learn from making that movie with all of those unbelievably talented people.
I think I learned, and it's something in terms of acting that I, because when I, much later, like 10 years later, when I really got back into acting again, I thought that it was, that it's tough to articulate, that acting was something that you really needed to push, you needed to try, to feel these feelings and push yourself to that place. And that's always kind of a mistake, at least for me, because if the harder I push, the farther away I'm going to get from where I want to be. And so I thought back to that, shooting that movie, and how these actors would kind of just be like water. And if, you know, if they didn't get to that place, then they would in the next take. I'm not saying that I'm a magical actor.
But
it's like completely mercurial, weird, emotional.
Was it very fluid on that film? Do you feel like you'd all be hanging out they call action and you just start, everyone would just...
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Nicole was just such an intense, amazing scene partner, and it seemed like it just, you know, she wasn't acting, and so I kind of felt like I wasn't acting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, like, the best you can feel like when you're acting is that you're not acting.
That's right.
Just you don't have to push for anything. And I think when I started acting again, I was so results-oriented, like, oh, I should cry at the end of the scene or something. And it's like, if you just go in knowing what happens in the scene, but also somewhat blind, and you can kind of just let things unfold in an organic way, then that's what feels really good, if you don't know what's going to happen.
And the complicated task is being really relaxed in a situation that is so heightened.
Yeah.
Which is, you're in a play, or and there are all these
That's
people,
what's
right?
crazy about theater, because you're in front of so many people,
and
you gotta... You just have to take a deep breath and you're
open
like...
Open the door.
And you can't pretend that they're not there. You know, there is, like, always going to be some part of your brain that's like, I'm performing in front of hundreds of people.
Right.
And yet, you kind of have to acknowledge it and simultaneously compartmentalize it, you know?
Well, I've been thinking a lot, like, it's really... It's been so incredible doing this play, with you in particular, because I just think... very early on, we became friends.
Yeah.
The way that happens. I was like, he makes me laugh, and we get each other, and we're so silly in the same ways and hard-working at the same time, and really want to do good work.
Yeah.
And felt so vulnerable and sort of saw, like, oh, I can tell this person when I feel scared and when I need some support.
Yeah.
And I feel like we just did that, and I don't know what that is when you meet someone and they're just so... familiar to you. It's such a great feeling, and it's such a cool part of what we get to do. If you make me laugh, it's like I'm yours. I'm so easy. It's like I'm yours forever.
Right.
That's it. You're never going to get rid of me because you make me laugh so much.
Yeah, and I would go home every night and just write jokes that I thought you'd like.
Yeah. Would you pitch them to your friends? Like, wait, guys.
Yeah, I'd record them and play them back, and I'd be like, how do I get Alana to like me?
Yeah. Humor.
It was tough. It was a long...
But dude, you did it.
I did it. Here,
here
we are.
The first podcast I'm showing you my home.
Yeah, crazy.
That doesn't get better than that.
Nice place.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What kept you, because you could have kept going. You were so gorgeous in that movie and so natural.
Thanks.
And adorable and painfully...
Prepubescent.
Vulnerable. And no, it's so funny. Like, if you just had longer hair now, I was also thinking there's no doubt that is Zane.
Yeah.
And yet that's many years ago at this point.
Yeah.
And there are things you do in this play now that I see are very much like...
I play for... I don't know if this is a spoiler, but I play someone who does porn in this play. So I'm really curious what you're going to...
What was it that kept you at the time... Why didn't you keep doing movies then? You could have.
I think kind of a combination of things. Mainly that it was a really cool experience, but then I went to high school and
You didn't have the bug. Like, I want to keep doing it.
I mean,
it, and
I loved acting.
And, yeah.
I really loved it, but it just was...
But it did become your thing.
Then it just became, like, such a book nerd, and I really just wanted to write, and that's kind of what... I was, like, such an English major through high school, even though there weren't majors.
That were incredibly...
Oh, man.
...influential at that time, or that you read more than once?
Yeah,
it's okay
remember,
if you don't remember.
No. I remember... I read Invisible Man in high school, and then I took a course on Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison in college. That's, like, one of my favorite books. Such an amazing New York story. What else? I don't know. I mean, I love picking apart literature and, like, in a class, because it was, like, I mean...
Did you have a great English teacher in high school?
I had a few really good English teachers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like a quasi-scientific, also really artsy-fartsy process. And kind of, it depends on the teacher, kind of sometimes whatever you say goes. And it's just like, you know, as long as you can back it up, like picking apart a metaphor in a book can be totally valid no matter which way you look at
sure.
it. Which was also good for me because I was a total slacker, but I was pretty good at bullshitting,
mm-hmm.
so that's why, probably, partially.
But also, like, you do the New York Times crossword puzzle
mm-hmm.
every day. Do you think your vocabulary is so wonderful because you've read so much?
I don't know if I have a great vocabulary.
You don't think
Richard
so?
Greenberg has a great
for sure
vocabulary.
And
I mean,
that's part of the attraction
the way
to
people
this play.
Talk in this play.
Yeah. Although a neighbor of mine came and was like, who talks like that?
No one.
I was
no one.
That's what's
high,
so exciting.
It's like a reality, it's a different dimension
mm-hmm.
that he writes from.
It's aspirational in that way.
Yeah, I mean, everyone is just so crazy articulate in this play. It's
yeah.
amazing. And it's really fun to be able to talk like that. But yeah, and I think, you know, I was an English major in college then. After that, I did creative writing. And I think... You know, in college, I kind of fell back in love with theater, and I was reading so many plays because I was so interested in dialogue and how to write dialogue, and just fascinated by that. And so I was just voraciously reading plays, and then I was kind of like, you know, like, why am I not saying these words? I mean, I fell in love with characters, and then I kind of got back into doing theater at college, and... I'm still an English major, but I would kind of take classes, and I was kind of afraid of it.
You intimidated by your parents' success, or did it not
matter
necessarily?
No, it was like, I was like, I'm so far removed from this now. What am I doing? Like, why, you know? But then I became, like, really compulsive. I had to do it, and I just, like, fell in love with being able to say really great words
yeah.
initially. And then eventually it became, you know, like, I feel like actors are actually writers as well, because there are an infinite number of ways to say any line, and you can put any meaning behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately you want to stick to the playwright's
or
writer's
them,
intention.
Yeah. Make
but,
them happy.
Yeah, but then, you know, you also bring your own quality to it, and that is writing in a way.
Well,
it's enhancing meaning.
That you wrote a pilot.
Yeah.
So you do write, actually.
Yeah, I wrote a pilot with my dad.
You did?
Yes, and we optioned it to Sony.
What is it about?
It was about this young painter who becomes very successful in New York City, and he kind of it's kind of just about the modern art scene. And it was a short story kind of that I wrote in college. This very minimal skeletal thing that we kind of
fleshed out.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. And I still try to write. I'm working on some stuff, but yeah.
You also sing and write music. Zane, right before you walk on stage,
yeah,
what happens in this play, for example?
A lot of the times, before I walk on stage, like, everything in my body and my mind is like, what are you doing? You can't go out there. You're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, just complete instinctual fight or flight.
Fight or flight, yeah.
And it's like, everything is like flight. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, well, no matter what, when the cue light happens, I have to open the door and step out and say my line. So, like, no matter what my body's telling me, my hand's still going to open the door. And then as soon as I'm on stage, it's, like, totally fine. I'm like, you know, like, these people aren't...
They're friendly.
Yeah, the audience is not hoping for you to fail.
Yeah.
Everyone is really rooting for you, and then you just take a deep breath, and you're present. And sometimes I don't have that total neurotic,
like, as a run
feeling.
Goes on, also, does
totally.
It get easier?
Totally.
Like, I saw you in Sunday. I thought you were so great at the Atlantic. I love your whole cast.
I'm not a nervous actor. It's just that it's just that, like, those 5 seconds before you have to go on stage, you're like,
yeah.
You're like, this is such a weird job. What
it's
am I?
So crazy.
What am I doing? Like, why am I? And then, you know, it feels so cathartic and great to be able to be someone else for a little bit.
Yeah. Is that why you like acting?
Yeah.
It's nice to be someone else for a bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely one of the reasons. I'm not someone that really... I don't derive pleasure from being in front of people. It's mm-hmm. it's really for myself, you know? And I mean, that sounds selfish because I don't ever feel like I'm acting for the audience. Like, it's more just because it makes me feel good, you know?
Well, I just want to say, if you are in New York City, in spring of 2020, I think till the end of March for sure, I've seen 1 million plays, and I think your performance in this play is extraordinary.
Oh, thank you.
And
you too, really, truly.
You. But I love standing backstage and watching some of the scenes that you're in that I'm not in. I think you're...
thank you.
It's so compelling. And so talented, and I look forward to the rest of this run, getting to do other stuff with you, and just getting to come see and support your work forever, my friend.
Right Zane. Back at you.
So
yeah.
Thank you for coming today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thank you
podcast.
For the tea. Thank you for introducing me to your dog.
Of course.
Thank you for letting me sit on your couch.
Of course. My pleasure.
Thanks, Alana.
You're welcome.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind the scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Hey, I am so excited to share some news with you guys. For the last few months, I've been working on another project that I've been calling Little Known Facts 2.0. Stage Network, an incredible new streaming platform which promises to be Netflix for theater lovers, asked me to do Little Known Facts as a filmed series, a talk show, as it were, in front of cameras. And I really thought about it for a long time because the thing that's made this podcast so special is that all of my guests have been able to share deep, intimate truths about their lives because we are in this tiny, comforting confessional that is the podcast booth. And I really had to think hard, could I still deliver the same kind of intimate, raw, hilarious, and unique interviews if cameras were involved? But I think I figured it out. And I'm so grateful to Stage Network for allowing me to make my dream of sharing incredible friends with you in this whole new way. So I shot 6 episodes. The first one is with Ben Platt. Other guests include Celia Keenan-Bolger, Zachary Quinto, George Salazar, Nikki M. James, John Slattery, and I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to share them with you. Stage Network really is an amazing place. Not only is it filled with incredible original content, it has licensed so much theater-related content, documentaries and films and all sorts of incredible programming. I feel like I dreamed up a network and someone else created it, and here it is. And the fact that I'm involved in even a small way with this incredible, incredible network is just truly an honor. So, to that end, to watch all of the content, including Little Known Facts, the series, go to watchstage.com. Enjoy, and I hope you like it. Little Known Facts is edited by Nicholas Klar and recorded in New York City.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.